My name is Ellie McCann, or Elizabeth, if you see stuff written by me. I am a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and I, through the Global Mission Program Unit of the ELCA, I have been sent to serve as a pastor with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan in the Holy Land. In the ELCJHL, it's a mouthful. You're about ready to get inundated with a mouthful of acronyms and names and stuff, so I apologize. In the ELCJHL, I am a communications assistant for the six congregations, the four K through 12 schools, and the educational programs. I'm also a communications assistant to Bishop Munib Younan, who is bishop of the ELCJHL. And as of last July, July 2010, is also serving as the president of the Lutheran World Federation. So there are many and various different aspects of my call, but it is my privilege to be here at Holden this week and to share a little bit with all of you. As I entitled this class, I entitled it So It's Complicated. The Israeli-Palestinian situation conflict is very complicated. And it has many, many layers. If someone ever, I think that there's one question that I often get a lot, that just when people first meet me, their question will be is, oh, what side are you on? And that just is in no way, shape, or form accurate. there are so many different sides and layers. They kind of say it's like peeling an onion, except it never ends. And so today's session, I figured, we maybe needed to offer just a very brief overview. I'm not going to go into detail on anything. First and foremost, I am a pastor. I am a theologian. I am a storyteller. I am a musician. I am not, nor have I ever been trained as a historian. But, as I said, I think it's important to get a little bit of background, and so we'll go through a few things today. But I wanted to start us out first with a reading from the Bible, and I was reading through Isaiah, because right now at the ELCJHL, we are working on a Lenten study and a Lenten liturgy on Isaiah, largely 2nd Isaiah, but a few other works, that looks at hope in exile, and looks at it through a Palestinian lens. And so one of the passages that I was just reading for that comes from the beginning of Isaiah chapter 2. So I'd like to begin today with that. In days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Many peoples shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Let us pray. Gracious God, we come together today to begin the journey of a new week at Holden Village. We ask your presence in this room, in this place, and on our journey. For open hearts, for accompaniment along the journey, and for your people in the body of Christ all around this world. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So I thought I'd start the day with a few questions. I always find it really fun. And I'm going to leave it, sorry, it doesn't look like nice and presentery, because I want to be able to jot down some of your answers. And so, first question. When you hear Jerusalem, what comes to mind? And there are no wrong answers whatsoever. This is just a first thing that comes to your mind.
It's the capital of Israel, as well as the ancient Hebrews.
Jesus. Complicated.
Sacred place for three religions.
Mm-hmm. Rocks and stones.
Rocks and stones.
Temple Mount.
Holy City.
Mm-hmm. Divided City.
Pardon?
Divided City.
Divided City.
Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I want to gather you like a mother can gather chicks, but you would not. Not that you want to put that.
Mm-hmm. We're just gathering things here.
An unsafe place.
Conflict. On the first one, it is also claimed as the capital of a of Palestinian state. Just to throw
I don't know
out.
How to spell this, but schmaltzy tourist site.
Schmaltzy tourist
site.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, great. So we got some Jerusalem stuff. When you hear Israel, what comes to mind? Again, there are no wrong answers. It's
Jacob.
Jacob.
Oops.
Oh. That's what happens when I type too fast.
Well, the state, the political state.
Modern state of Israel.
Palestinian state.
Which brings up Palestinian state?
Water haves and have nots.
Mm-hmm.
Water.
Yeah. And I so can't type right now. Yep, that will come up on the issues at the end. It's a major one.
Struggles with God.
Mm-hmm.
Land disputes.
U.S. aid.
Military
aid to Israel.
Yeah. Yep, there's a lot of that.
Settlements.
Yep. And I'll throw that word up there. We can talk about that if we want to. But
differences within the Jewish state. Differences of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Strong military state.
Mm-hmm. Walls.
Walls.
Questionable borders.
Mm-hmm.
Violence.
Checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Second-class citizen.
Yep. Okay, so let's do another question. When you hear Palestinian, what comes to mind? It doesn't have to necessarily, with any of these things, they don't have to be things you agree with or disagree with. Just what comes to mind? What do you hear?
Dispossessed.
Refugees.
Mistreated.
How do you spell dispossessed? Apparently like that.
Thank God for spell check.
Yeah, exactly.
Hamas.
Hamas?
Fatah.
Yeah, with that, must be Fatah. PLO. And then probably separately, Palestinian Authority.
Ancient civilization.
Best educated in the Middle East.
And then, ancient civilization.
Mm-hmm. Occupied.
You also hear about
Muslim and Christian.
Yep.
What is their history?
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to throw up a couple of words that you guys haven't mentioned here, but that I have often heard in the news or in media, which often, and you'll actually hear this tomorrow at Vespers, you'll get a chance to hear and interview some of our high school students in Ramallah and ask them if there is anything you would want to tell people about you, this place, or this country, what would you want to tell them? And it made me cry that a lot of their answers were, I would want to tell them that we're not terrorists, that we're actually people. We'd like to invite them to come here, so we'll throw that one out. Just a couple more quick questions. When you hear Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there's probably people in here that know a lot more details about this than I do.
Hopeless.
Hopeless.
Never ending.
One state versus two state.
1948,
1967. Mm-hmm.
Intifada.
Yep. Second. Exactly. First and second.
Third.
Oslo Accords. Yeah.
The U.S. supported the Israeli state.
So the same homeland.
Pardon?
The same homeland.
France and Britain.
Yep.
Two competing stories.
Yes.
Holocaust.
Yep.
Stones versus tanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Soldiers all over the place. And is it Israel?
Again, the wall.
Wow. Yeah.
And that means many things.
Wow. Checkpoints. Housing demolitions.
Water. Settlements.
Yeah. Water. Settlements. These are all in Jerusalem. We'll come back to these at the end as the
rate of return.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Rate of return. Yeah. We'll come back. Pardon?
Suicide bomber.
When you hear visiting the Holy Land, what comes to mind?
Seeing places in the Bible.
Idealized.
Danger.
Danger?
Being rebaptized in the Jordan.
Walk where Jesus walked.
Israel, Palestine, and Jordan.
The commercialization of some of the sites and holy sites like Via Dolorosa.
Yeah. And find these questions, that this one really interesting, because especially when you're talking to Christians, especially in the States or in Canada or in a lot of places in the world, there's a big divide when they think about like Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Israel, Palestine, all of that, what they know, what they don't know. And then suddenly, if someone says, oh, I'm going on a trip to the Holy Land, how suddenly like they're just very different things that we put up on this list than we put up on any of the former lists. And so I have something a little funny to show you. It's a clip from the TV show The Simpsons. Because last year in season 21, Ned Flanders invites the Simpsons to go on a trip to the Holy Land with him. And whether or not you like The Simpsons, in my opinion, you know, The Simpsons is based on stereotypes and pushing them to the limit without quite breaking them. And so sometimes it can be very over the top, but there's always, you know, some kernel in there of like, this is a reaction that you could get. And so I wanted to share this with you.
Before you start, can I say that when I visited, I was struck by and uncomfortable with the Christian focus of so many U.S. groups coming. It makes sense, of course, and this is where Jesus came from. At the same time, walking through the streets of Nazareth, one of the few mixed cities, and being guided by a Jewish friend, walking with Christians and hearing Muslim call prayers, just sort of struck me that, you know, the Christian is only one part of the story.
Yeah, and also the I'd still say probably the decently majority of groups that come that have no connection with present day Christians. They come and their rootedness is in the stones of the buildings as opposed to the living stones of the people there. A history trip. And there were days in the past year in which it felt like I lived in a theme park right around Easter. I was walking around the old city and I'm like, oh my gosh, do I live in Jerusalem or do I live in a theme park? Because all the different groups around and, you know, just kind of that like milling around, not quite sure where you're going, theme park, follow the guide, let's go on our next ride. Next ride being the Holy Sepulchre or the Via Dolorosa or something. So this is Ned Flanders asking Homer Simpson to come to the Holy Land with him, and Homer's immediate reaction to what that would mean.
Homer. You know, our Bible study group is going to the Holy Land next month. I'd like you and your family to come as my guests.
Let me think. Take my family to a war zone on a bus filled with religious limos in a country with no pork in a desert with no casinos. Oh, where do I sign up?
So just a little tiny clip for you there. They end up going. Oh, apparently I have to get out of. Come on. Show me PowerPoint, not this. You're not PowerPoint. Escaped. They end up going, and they actually have some pretty accurate like background depictions. Of course, it is completely and utterly flat. Characters, very stereotypical, and it goes on. Ned has invited them because he wants to try and save Homer. It's very kind of apocalyptic, evangelistic, Christian Zionist group that they go with. Okay, so background. Sorry, we maybe spent a little bit longer on that, but I think it's important to just kind of get the words flowing and all of that. So now the next part will be very brief, very much not in detail. You could spend your whole life studying the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, We don't have that time this morning. and so we're just going to touch a few of the major dates, especially ones that will likely come up in later sessions this week if you come to other sessions. And if not, maybe get some things in your mind. I'll shout out some books and some resources at the end of our time together. So history. Up until World War I, historical Palestine was under Ottoman rule for about the 400 years before that. So that's, I think, where we kind of need to start and just see. So just start that there. In the late 19th century, there was the rise of nationalism in many places in Europe and around the world. And in the late 19th century, Jewish nationalism, or Zionism, was part of that and began. And the search for a Jewish state and where that would be, there was a lot of discussion. I'm not going to get into it, and I also don't necessarily know it all that incredibly well. So, but by 1914, there are about 60,000 Jewish people living in Palestine. They moved there, they purchased land. There were funds that would help Jewish people to purchase land. 1914-1918, World War I. The world wars often have had a lot to do with areas that weren't necessarily exactly in there, and part of World War I was the divvying up of who got what afterwards, and that meant lands and peoples and countries. In 1917, you might hear the Balfour Declaration, which, quote, was favored the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, but that nothing should be done to prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. 1919 to 1948, historical Palestine was under British mandate. This was under British rule. Between 1919 and 1926, about 90,000 more Jewish immigrants moved in. 1937, the Peel Commission was the first time in which a two-state solution was suggested. In 1939, the British government was still suggesting a one-state solution. And then World War II, which adds a lot of complicatedness and of many, many layers, obviously, and very much so the Holocaust and the millions of Jewish people who were killed and dispossessed, who were tortured, who were starved. This is very much a part of the narrative. On other sides, even though it, you know, came to a conclusion in 1945, most all countries were pretty much out of funds. And so there were some instances then in which it was just kind of decided to let some of the colonies or some of the other places that you were in charge of just kind of slide or let them go because there weren't even enough resources left for your immediate places. Again, I'm not a historian. At the end of that, United Nations was formed. And in 1947, the partition plan was brought. So British mandate, 1946. These are a few maps we'll come back to. Palestine, the white areas were lands that were owned by Jewish immigrants. The dark color here the Palestinian land. The UN plan 1947 here suggested the partitioning, the two-state solution such as this, that Gaza Strip here a little bit more, a larger West Bank than we know, and also the northern area. And so that was their suggestion in 1947, a two-state solution. It was voted on the 29th of November, 1947. 33 countries in favor, 13 countries were opposed, and 10 countries abstained. Then we come to the 1948 war, the Arab-Israeli war, is what the world kind of calls it. For Israelis, it's often called the War of Independence. For Palestinians, it's called al-Nakba, which means the catastrophe. I can't even begin to get into the complicatedness of it, and I apologize for that. This is more to just get some dates out there. In the end of the war, Israel had claimed more land and extended borders. It was complicated, lots of things. And so in 1948, we get what's called, or 1949 Armistice Line, also known as the Green Line, if you hear that, also referred to as the pre-1967 borders. So if you're hearing about two-state solution, and they say pre-1967 borders, this is what they're talking about, has the Gaza Strip. So in 1948, at the end of that, Egypt had control of the Gaza Strip. Jordan, or Transjordan, had control of the West Bank. I also often get the question, why is it called the West Bank? It's the West Bank because it's on the west bank of the Jordan River, which runs right there, Dead Sea here. So when we talk about pre-1967 borders, that's what we're talking about. This was also the beginning of what they quote unquote call the refugee problem. It's right around 700,000 Palestinians were either forced out or fled. And the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Near East was formed. It is the only, if I'm correct, it's the only refugee formation of the UN that is specific for only one group of people. It is still very much a part. In 2010, there are now 4.7 million Palestinian refugees registered with UNRWA, with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. My bishop being one of them, and his wife, my bishop, Bishop Yunan, was born in the Old City of Jerusalem. Is he going to get annoyed at me if I say what year? He was born in 1950. So just a couple years after. Both of his parents had fled. I think one of his parents fled from further west, and then one of his parents from West Jerusalem. And they met, they married in the Old City. They were refugees living in, it was a Greek Orthodox, church grounds there, and so he grew up in the Old City his whole life, except for we'll get to the Six-Day War soon, and because of that, he did his senior year of high school in Beit Jala, just south of Jerusalem, because of the effects of the 1967 war. Sorry, I feel scattered this morning. So on the 1949 armistice lines, the Green Line, Israel comprised of 78% of historical Palestine, Gaza Strip, and the West Bank. Pre-1967 borders is 22%. Six-Day War, 1967, Israel was worried about other strikes and did a preemptive strike. It took control of the Gaza Strip from Egypt, West Bank, including East Jerusalem from Jordan, and also the Golan Heights from Syria. One thing that I apologize I missed in the UN partition plan was the two-state solution, yes, but with an internationally, with an international city of Jerusalem that was to be arbitrated by the United Nations and not be with either, so that it could be an international city. Just very quickly, not going to do a full from 1967 till now, but the intifadas that were mentioned, the uprisings, 1987, the first intifada. 1993 were the Oslo Accords, which were very major. It was the first time that the PLO offered official recognition of Israel and officially renounced terrorism. It was the establishment of the Palestinian Authority, which there was supposed to be a process with Oslo Accords. It was supposed to continue, the conversation was supposed to continue, and they decided that they were going to leave some of the major status issues, such as Jerusalem, until the end. Said, oh, we'll get to that. Let's at least do this now, we'll get to that. And it didn't work. The Palestinian Authority was established. There are what's called Area A, Area B, Area C, and how they're called depends on who has authority over them, whose forces are where. That actually is what really brings us to this fourth map on the right here. Because of all the different areas, Area A, Area B, Area C, because of the illegal settlements that we'll get to in just a moment, the West Bank does not really exist on the pre-1967 borders. With the settlements, with the roads to get to the settlements that have barbed wire surrounding them or walls surrounding them. We'll get to the wall in just a second. They call it the Swiss cheese because there's lots of little holes and very difficult to get from one part to another. So when they talk about, you know, a contiguous state, right now that is hard to see or to imagine. 2000 was the second intifada, and then there have been many attempts at peace process in the last 11 years. Right now, actually, I've been a little out of the news world because I haven't wanted to tie up obviously I'm at Golden Village. But before I left, France was working on face-to-face talks that they were hoping to be having at the end of June. I know that Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas had agreed to come and had agreed to a lot of the issues. They are still waiting on Prime Minister Netanyahu as to whether or not he would accept the invitation. So I'm not quite sure if they don't have conversations now, I'm not quite sure what the rest of the year is going to look like. It's definitely been a very intense year this year. And there's definitely a lot of conversation and rumor surrounding whether or not Palestinian Authority will declare a Palestinian state in September. It's a possibility, and we'll just we'll go to the United Nations and ask for recognition as a Palestinian state. Ramifications of that, I don't think anyone knows. So at this point in time, I'm still really hoping that negotiations this month with France start to make some progress and open up lines of communication again. And then very shortly, and I'll leave some time for questions, just to throw out there some of the major status issues when we're talking about it. What I didn't put on here is probably I needed to was a one state versus two state solution. Do you have one or two? If there is one state solution, then there is not a Jewish-Israeli majority, and so that's not really something that Israel wants. But at the same point in time, Palestinians have been without a lot of very basic human rights and dignity for pushing 60 years now. So one state, two state. With that comes the issue of borders. Is it pre-1967 borders? What happens to the illegal settlements in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, which is part of the West Bank? And then on that same time, what happens to the now 4.7 million refugees registered with UNRWA? Right of return has been a very big issue. Finding a political solution to the issue of the refugees. That's how they most often put it. Freedom of movement. I will be getting into checkpoints, walls, housing demolitions, family reunification, Jerusalem ID card versus. On one of my other sessions this week. And so if you want to learn more about that, I invite you to come to that. But this is a map from B'Tselem, an NGO that works in Jerusalem. And this is a map that actually shows you here the, I got rid of my toolbars, didn't I? Come on, let me zoom in. Well, I think I know what they all are. This little thing here tells you what all the different colors mean. So here's your West Bank. Here on the right, I've just blown up surrounding Jerusalem. The blue the light blue is Israeli controlled. The slightly darker blue are illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank. You'll see lots of blue there. You'll also see lots of blue in East Jerusalem. Immediately down the hill from where I live, so within about 200 meters, is an Israeli settlement in East Jerusalem, which is east of the Green Line.
Ellie, can you just go to the map and kind of point things out to us?
Sure.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah. So this here, the like kind of kidney bean shape, is West Bank. Pre-1967, let me just get my view back here. Show me my toolbars, please. Because F8 doesn't seem to be working. And I'll just, I need this because then I can show you. There we go. So I'll just show you on Jerusalem, because then it'll be easier to see. Green line is green on this map. So that's the green line, the pre-1967, the 1949 armistice. The red line is where the 30-foot tall concrete wall is already built. You can see, especially around Jerusalem, it is very far from the green line. Right here, if you see like this thing that just looks like a blob, Rachel's tomb is right there, but Rachel's tomb, or the historical place in which they think Rachel's tomb is right on the old Hebron Road that has been the road for the last 2,000 years, at least. And so that main road that has been a thoroughfare into Bethlehem and down to Hebron down here doesn't exist anymore, and there is this crazy wall in Bethlehem. I'll have some pictures of it in my other presentation. The dotted red line is where the wall has been approved to be built, but at this point in time was not yet built. You see right above my finger here where the red line is, that is on the way up to Ramallah. It's a street that I take a lot, and it's actually a street in which they have put the wall right down the middle of a four-lane street. And so people, family members who, one family member was living on this side of the street, and so extended family members bought land on the other side of the street. And now there's a 30-foot concrete wall between them, and the people on this side, on the Palestinian side of it, have to have a permit to be able to come over and visit their relatives on the other side of the street. The purple line is proposed, and you'll note here, Maale Adamim is one of the largest illegal settlements. Israel considers it natural growth of Jerusalem, and says that it should be included in the greater Jerusalem and any things that happen. Maale Adamim is actually its borders of the land that has been set aside for it go almost all the way to Jericho. So that's a long ways east. it doesn't like me because I haven't touched it long enough. Other major end status issues are water and resources. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, land swaps for the settlements or something like that. But a lot of the settlements are situated very much in places that control flow of water or control water taken out of the aquifers that are below. So any land swaps, there also has to be consideration of access to resources, land that actually produces and is able to produce the same stuff as the most fertile land on which the Israeli settlements have been built. I think there's been offers of, oh, we'll just give them more of the Negev. The Negev desert doesn't compare with the most fertile land and all of the water resources that a lot of the settlements are on. Like I said at the beginning, it's complicated. There isn't two sides. I don't remember if it was yours, but someone talked about, you know, that there are two narratives side by side. And there is a lot of education about just one of the narratives and not the other. One of the things that happened with the Oslo Accords, definitely with the walls and the checkpoints, is it's also incredibly hard for Palestinians and Israelis to actually come together and meet one another. It is illegal for Israeli people to enter into Area A, which is the populated Palestinian areas in which there's Palestinian authority. authority. And so it can just be really hard. There's also just, and oftentimes, a lack of teaching about the other, or a lack of accurate teaching as the other would want to be taught. To do a last little story, as I was flying here, I took a Nesher to the airport, and the Nesher is a shared taxi bus. There's normally about 10 of you, and you go to the airport. And I live in East Jerusalem. I live on the east side of the Green Line. I live on the Lutheran World Federation property. I live on the grounds of the Augusta Victoria Hospital in a guest house there. And in the Nesher with me, it was, you know, just around graduation time, and so it was me and I think one other person, and then eight young Jewish women who had just finished a year of studies in Jerusalem. They were all from the States. And we got out of the bus at the end, and one of them didn't have enough money with her to pay for her fare. And so I was like, need some money? No problem. You know, how much are you short? I can help. Because I think there's nothing worse than like finding that you've already taken something and then you can't pay for it. And so we just started the conversation a little bit, and they said, oh, where do you, or were you here on a visit? And I was like, no, I live here. And the funny part was they asked me what I was doing here, and I said, oh, I'm a Lutheran pastor. She said, what's that? Right. But then they asked me, where do you live? And I said, I live on the Mount of Olives. And the girl that I was talking to, 19 or 20, she looked at me, and she had been living in Jerusalem for a whole year. And she looked at me and she said, I didn't think anybody lived there. I didn't think anybody lived there. And I said, actually, a lot of people live there. A lot of people live there. So part of all of this is narrative, is propaganda, is what people are told or not told. And, you know, I didn't think anybody lived there. So what's wrong with building some houses there? I didn't think anybody lived there. Well, they don't take care of their houses over there. And we do. You know, that might be what it looks like. Had some people come and say, wow, East Jerusalem just looks really run down. Whereas there's all this great new construction in West Jerusalem, and it's very, very modern. Because people in East Jerusalem can't get building permits unless you're in an illegal Israeli settlement. The Lutheran World Federation has been trying to build the Mount of Olives housing project for probably close to 10 years now. And they keep running up against difficulty after difficulty, hoop after hoop. And they haven't been able to break ground yet. But the illegal Israeli settlement that's 150 yards away that actually abuts to Lutheran World Federation land got permission earlier this year to build 250 units. There's a lot more than the surface. And so I apologize that this session was so much history and scattered and so many things thrown at you. But I hope that with this and the rest of my sessions, I can actually share stories with you and introduce you to some of the people that I have come to know and love, and to get into the issues in a very different and personal way. So other sessions will be on Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jordan and the Holy Land. I'm on walls, checkpoints, housing demolitions, and the effects on daily lives of Palestinians. One on Palestinian art and culture and tradition. And I got to go around the West Bank, super fun, because Holden said, yeah, sure, we can take it at our bookstore. So I have about $400 of handmade Palestinian handicrafts, so you can come. And then after that, they'll be in the gift store later this week. And then simply because I got a few questions earlier this week, I will do a session at the end of the week on what it's like to be a young blonde female pastor in Jerusalem. I'm really sorry that there wasn't huge time for discussion left right now, but are there any questions, reflections?
One of each. An observation is it looks, if you go to your 2010 map, it looks like the Israeli government, through the Swiss cheese strategy, is purposefully saying there won't be a separate Palestinian state. I mean, if you really look at that map, and look what it was 1967, which, by the way, I think President Obama has asked the Israeli government to go back to the 67 borders.
Yep, in his speech just recently, he said that there was a lot of other very pro-Israeli stuff as well, but he mentioned 1967 borders, and within about half an hour, he was very berated
by
Israel.
But anyway, it looks apparent by the strategy that it's a divide and conquer kind of approach by the Israeli government to not really have a Palestinian state coexist with an Israeli state. And the question I had that you brought up earlier is, I'm intrigued that the United Nations call for Jerusalem to be an international city, which to me seems like the perfect solution. Mm-hmm. To make it a UN-appointed governor, to have a council made up of Muslims, Christians, and Israelis, and to have it be a true international city that's governed by a separate police force, or protected by a separate police force, not part of a Palestinian state, not part of a Jewish state, but an international city where you get peace institutes and things like that, to truly make it an international city. Mm-hmm. And that to me seems like not only symbolic, but the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And first of all, on your first thing with the Swiss cheese, you're right. It makes it really very difficult. There are a lot of Palestinians who I think would probably say fine to a one-state solution. The problem that it poses for Israel is that there are more Palestinians than Jewish Israelis, and so the way it seems to me is that they want the Swiss cheese, but they don't want the Palestinians to be equals, to have the same rights. And a one-state solution can't work that way. Official ELCJHL would say two-state solution, 1967 borders, a political solution to refugees, political solution to settlements with equal resources and water and a shared Jerusalem.
The walls almost seem like a reservation type solution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there that making a comment that the walls almost seem like a reservation type solution, and there have been a lot of parallels drawn to that over the years.
Well, the dialogue is so difficult. Because, you know, Obama's speech and the prime minister was there beforehand, and
mm-hmm.
and I had people on Facebook just, you know, oh, he's so wonderful, and it's like, you know, I have problems with the way that he runs his government, his military, and then it was boom, you're anti-Semitic. It's
mm-hmm.
like, you know, can you not discuss, you know, the problems with Israel without being anti-Semitic? It makes it so difficult to have the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right, and that's part of the many layers with it.
I knew a Palestinian who was actually in this country.
Mm-hmm.
He was an obstetrician,
mm-hmm.
and he showed a video of a wedding that he went back to Palestine for. And I asked him, I said, kind of all the relatives he had back there. And he says, oh yeah, we're fighting the war of the womb. they're trying to breed as fast as they can to overpower the Israelis.
That isn't something that is true across the board in any way, shape, or form. It really depends, just as in this country, just as in many countries around the world. The number of children that people have often is very linked to how much education they have had, the age at which marriage is a norm. Oftentimes, country versus city has a large thing to that. You know, some of that is also the same as the stuff behind, what's his name? Three Cups of Tea. Thanks. That, you know, even a fifth grade education for young women makes a huge change. And so it really depends on where you're living. In the West Bank, there is also similar the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community in Israel is also having many, many, many children, so it's part of it too. I'd say that that's more of a inside of cultural stuff and other factors as opposed to something across the board.
Is it true that the Israeli army has a contingency of Palestinians within that army? And if so, to what extent?
I would say no, that there are no Palestinians. There may be Israeli Arabs, but they would be Israeli citizens. Palestinian Authority is completely its own and separate thing.
You didn't talk about the Hamas avowed goal to destroy Israel. They would not accept an Israeli state. Yet now Hamas has merged with Fatah. Mm-hmm.
And those are also things that are in talks as well. I haven't been the most in it, but in the talks and in the mergers with the reconciliation between Hamas and Fatah. That has definitely been in discussion, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that in this, Hamas has said that they will recognize Israel. Hamas was also the legally, democratically elected government, and the U.S. said we won't allow that to happen. So there's also some questions as to what does democracy mean, especially when the U.S. decides that they don't like how a group of people democratically decides.
Well, the other problem with the Hamas and the reconciliation that just happened is the fact that Hamas is still on the U.S. list of terrorist organizations, mm-hmm. and so they're about to cut off the funding that comes in. Mm-hmm. But from the Palestinian perspective, and those who I've talked to and my experience, they think that the only real way for themselves to move forward is to be a united people. And that's what the problem that's happening, been happening for a while, has been the division between Fatah and...
And that's been a lot of the problems in the talks that were, the peace talks that have tried to happen in the last couple of years. Because if peace talks ended up happening and working with Fatah, then what would have happened to the Gaza Strip, which was under? So there are plans now for an election. Gets into politics that I'm not an expert in. We are over our time. So thank you very much. I hope this wasn't too scattered.